hearts and flowers coming down the road. But in reality, there's actually very little about the facts or the legends about St. Valentine that have anything to do with love. Back in the 3rd century, he supposedly performed fast marriage ceremonies for couples so that the men would not be drafted into the Roman army, which of course was certain death back then. That's it. That's it. That's the only thing about Valentine that has anything to do with love. The whole Valentine's Day love thing didn't begin until the 14th century. Of course, you know, St. Valentine, 3rd century, Geoffrey Chaucer, 14th century. He and his cronies invented most of the traditions that have freighted Valentine's Day with love ever since. But personally, I like having a holiday that focuses on love, because every single one of us needs to be loved, and we need to give love as well. Brain science reminds us that that need for love is hardwired into human beings. Our need to connect emotionally with one another evolved with the limbic system in the brain to help us survive as a species. And there are so many ways to love, so many kinds of love. We begin learning love when we're just tiny babies. When we first begin to grasp that our mother or our primary caregiver is separate from us, we find out that we and this other can please each other or we can hurt each other. And so tenderness toward one another bonds us so that we, the tiny infant, can thrive. As we grow, family relationships tutor us in intimacy. And if we are loved well enough, we learn to love ourselves and to trust the world enough to soften our boundaries a little so that giving and receiving love beyond the family circle becomes possible. And then in childhood, that circle expands. Love that we call friendship opens our eyes to new possibilities. Teenage love lifts off like a skyrocket, and then it comes crashing down to earth. And we become a little bit wiser in the ways of love. Committed partnerships, parenting for some of us, these encourage us to transform romantic love into an abiding and sustaining set of emotions and actions that one writer I like called stirring the oatmeal love. Isn't that a great image? Stirring the oatmeal. And of course, we love through our work and our play, and in the way that Professor Cornel West described when he said, justice is what love looks like in public, just like tenderness is what love feels like in private. So some years back, quite a few years back, my friend Robert Fulghum wanted to find out more about our human need to love and be loved. Some of you, how many of you remember Robert Fulghum? Yeah, he was this guy who wrote a book famous in the 80s and 90s called All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten. Yeah. Fulghum. So Fulghum is a Unitarian minister. And I got to know him when he came to my seminary as a minister in residence for a semester. So Fulghum decided he was going to collect love stories and make a book. So he went out into the coffee shops of his native Seattle, and he set up a sign on his table that said, tell me a love story and I'll buy you a cup of coffee and make you famous. When people first saw his sign, they laughed and then they rolled their eyes. But how often do we really get to tell our story to someone who is eager to hear it? People of all kinds gathered around Fulghum's table to tell love stories and to hear each other's love stories. So think about that for a minute. If you came across Robert Fulghum and his sign at one of your local coffee shops here in Madison, what love story would you tell? Would it be one of those stirring the oatmeal love stories? Would it be a story of love found and then lost. A story of your love for Earth that has led you to make significant sacrifices in your life. Or perhaps it would be a story of love's steadfastness, a story of how love perseveres. Our Unitarian, our Universalist ancestors would tell that story of love's perseverance. They believed that God's love could face down all difficulty and that it encompassed all humanity. This seems really second nature for us today, but in the 18th and 19th centuries, it was radical. The Universalist Calvinist neighbors were shouting, "This universal love thing is terrible. People won't be good because of love. Whoever was good because of love. They will only be good because of fear." Fear of judgment and punishment were supposed to motivate us to live morally. But even in the face of persecution, the Universalists persevered. They took to their heart the religious commandment to love their neighbors. They loved by working in the abolitionist movement. They loved by helping to establish the American Red Cross. They helped by creating and sustaining settlement houses that aided immigrants in the early 1900s. They also joined in the fight for women's rights and workers' rights. They're actually the models for our social justice engagement today. So if I ran into Robert Fulghum and his request for love stories, I think I would tell him the story of my friend Brad, the dad. Brad's my preaching partner this morning, and we'll hear from him in just a moment. But first, I want to introduce him to you by using some of his words from the sermon that he gave a few years ago to Unitarian Universalist Church West. Here are Brad's words. "Picture a child born to a single mother who is addicted to crack cocaine and alcohol. Her every waking moment is consumed by an incessant hunger and search for the next high. She has utter disregard for this child. His basic needs are at war with the merciless enemy, crack, and only one desire can be fulfilled. The child loses every time. There is no father. Often there are no lights, no heat or hot water, no food, clean clothes, no rules, no love, no attention, no affection. There's only crack smoke, empty beer cans, and strange men coming and going till all times of the night. And if the child cries from hunger or lack of sleep, he's fed punches to the face to shut him up. Picture this child not learning to read until he's 9. Feel the bite of cold, hard steel around his tiny wrists. Feel his loneliness, fear, confusion, and the sadness of being locked in jail for trying to protect and earn the love of a mother who cursed the day he was born. Imagine a child who wanted to be Superman, who wanted to be an attorney or a policeman, who dreamed of his mother loving him and his daddy being home. Instead, he's a ward of the state, thrown into a cell and left alone to cry. Honestly, ask yourselves, what possible future could this child truly have? Would it surprise anyone if this child answered the call of the most basic human instinct, self-preservation, and took to the streets? We are all aware of the statistics concerning fatherless Black children born in poverty. So imagine the surprise of this child who is now an adult in a prison cell, watching a crowd of Black and white people marching through the streets on television, professing Black Lives Matter, Black Lives Matter. I was beyond shocked at the sight. I thought it was some kind of hoax. I've been Black all my life, and my life has never mattered. The lives of little Black boys and little Black girls who live the same nightmare as me never mattered. And my son, whose life I would give my life to save, he's never mattered to anyone. Feeling frustrated and angry, I ask myself, who are these Black lives everyone claims to matter? So that's the end of Brad's words. I'll tell you, it was my congregation and me that Brad saw on television that day. It was 2016, and we were marching to protest the dismissal of charges against a police officer named Joseph Mensa, who had shot and killed a young man named Jay Anderson Jr., innocent young Black man. It's a terrible story, but I bet you've heard that story before, or one like it. It's a terribly familiar story. So Brad wrote to me, took my name off the TV screen, and he wrote to me and he said, "Does my Black life matter? Does my son's Black life matter? Or is it just the Black lives who are dead that matter?" He asked me to put time and energy into helping the Black men, women, and children who are living. And of course, my congregation and I were doing that. We were doing things to help living people. We were working on prison reform, for one thing. We were working on all kinds of issues in our community. But Brad's question, is it only the Black lives who are dead that matter, hit me in the face like a bucket of cold water. So Brad and I started writing to each other. And then, like the good minister I was, I wondered if my church could help Brad in more extensive ways than I could do by myself. So I turned to my social action committee for help. So let me use a few more words from Brad to tell you what happened there. Brad said, "Suzelle talked to some people on a committee at the church to see if more help than hers alone could be offered to me. These people wanted to know why I was in prison. Was I a rapist? What? Was I a scammer? These people wanted to know if I was a scammer. They didn't know me, didn't care to know me, didn't ask if they could speak with me or meet me. Eerily reminiscent of slave culture and a true example of unconscious racial bias. They were only interested in speaking with another white person, a social worker, prison official maybe, about me, who in their mind would reveal the true content of my character. I felt supremely insulted and disrespected, and I planned to cut all ties with Suzelle." So when I received that letter from Brad, I knew I was in over my head. And I turned to a member of my congregation for support. That congregation member, Lynn, and her husband, Mark, had had relationships with several incarcerated men through the prison pen pal program of the Unitarian Universalist Church of the Larger Fellowship. And that program is now called Worthy Now. How many of you know about Worthy Now? Yeah, it's a powerful program that invites people on both sides of prison walls into beloved community with one another. So Lynn and Mark began writing to Brad and they began visiting him. It was a rocky relationship at first. How was Brad going to trust Lynn? He didn't feel like he could trust her, but she was patient and she treated him with respect. She recognized something that I had completely missed. Brad wasn't looking for help. He wasn't looking for charity. He wanted honest relationship. He was looking for love. Brad says that Lynn and Mark never othered him or questioned his motives. They opened their hearts to him in friendship, and their love changed his life. And his love changed their lives as well. So a few years after this, I came back into Brad's life. And my husband and I are good friends with him and with his son, who's actually been living with us for the past few months. He's a hardworking, kind young man who's trying to find his way in life without most of the things that you and I probably take for granted. We visit Brad when we can. We write to him often, and he calls us when he can do so. If you've never communicated with somebody in prison, let me tell you, prison communications cost way more money than you'd possibly imagine. And most of the cost is borne by the inmate. In addition, prison officials can monitor our phone calls and our emails and our letters at any time. In Brad's reflection, you'll hear an electronic voice coming over the sound that reminds us of that very thing, because the sound for his reflection was recorded on a phone call. And yet, through all of this, there's love. So let's hear about that now from Brad the dad.
Then T-Mac, then T-Y, and Black were all killed. Then Starsky was robbed and killed by his own nephew. Each time I learned of one of my friends' deaths, another part of me died. The Wisconsin Supermax prison is a 23 hours a day lockdown solitary confinement facility. When I was incarcerated there, I had a subscription to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel to stay current with what's going on in the world. I was thumbing through the pages one day when I saw a picture of my cousin Nene, who was like a big sister to me, in the obituary section. I was shocked and confused because I had just used my last phone call to talk to her. At Supermax, we were allowed one 15-minute call per month. But that's how I learned Nene was dead. And a part of me died that day. Each time I wrote a letter, but received no response, dialed a phone number, and the call was not accepted, dialed another number, but that phone number did not receive collect calls. A little part of me died. The hundreds of times I was forced to strip totally naked in front of a male prison guard, pull my genitals to the left, then to the right, and then turn around and bend over and cough while he looked up my anus.
Phone calls other than properly placed attorney calls may be monitored and recorded.
Another part of me died. Every single time I demanded to be treated with some semblance of humanity, and I was thrown into solitary confinement, a part of me died. Every time I spoke out or stood against injustice, and I was gassed, maced, pepper sprayed, or tasered, a part of me died. Every time I had a feeding tube shoved down my throat to force feed me during a nonviolent hunger strike, a part of me died. All of this begs the question, what is left of me? Mathematically, there are only so many parts to a whole, and with so many parts of me dying throughout 19 years of incarceration, one might very well ask, what is left? And I would answer, the most important part of me has never died, and that part is love. The love I have for my son, the love I've held for those I loved before I came to prison, the love I've hoped for, prayed for, and dreamed of experiencing every time my head hits the cold, hard bunk at night, the love for humanity that Dr. King dreamed of. For 19 years, my mind, body, and spirit has survived solely off the pure desire to feel and share love, similar to a vulnerable baby calf totally dependent upon his mother's milk. Love has given me the hope and strength to not only endure my toughest trials and tribulations, but to overcome them. Love has given me the hope and strength to visualize the possibilities of what lies beyond my present situation. The love in my heart radiates through the concrete walls and barbed wire gates surrounding me out into the world, where the world has boomerang love back to me. I have made new friends, discovered new love, and not only am I a loving, attentive father to my son, but I have a beautiful, intelligent stepdaughter who has given me the gift of her love. The greatest force in the world is the love that each of us has within us. The greatest service we can do for the world is sharing that love with a stranger. The greatest gift we can receive is the love of someone else. It is my dream of hope for and belief in this reciprocal love that has kept my spirit shining, my heart beating, and my hope alive while doing time. Love is why I have studied law and religion, why I have mentored and tutored other inmates and been a listening presence for those around me when they are in need. It is why I have spoken up against injustice and stayed in close touch with my son throughout his life and put his good above my own at all times. And love is why I have reached out to you today with this message. Love, go give some. Thank you for listening to my words, and thank you for hearing my heart speaking.
Now, Brad's brilliant. He's compassionate and he's funny. He's so many things that white supremacy culture has taught people like me never to expect from somebody in his circumstances. We have shown each other mutual caring and support. He's taught me what being poor and Black in America is like. And I research topics for him that he's not allowed to pursue behind bars. He's taught me what all my years of engagement in anti-racism, anti-oppression work never could teach me, including the many grim realities of incarceration, especially incarceration for a Black man. And I have learned to bear the horrific truth of this. Prison life in America is hell. It's set up to punish people's bodies, shred their selfhood, wreck their families, and destroy their souls. Incarceration in America is based on the Calvinist principle that our universalist ancestors fought against centuries ago. The principle that only fear and punishment will keep us from doing evil deeds. I tell you, it does not work. There are many systems of incarceration around the world that cost far less and return far more people to society with a chance of new life than our American system does. I believe Brad when he says that love was the thing that has kept him alive, kept him going through 19, actually now 20 years in prison, and the deep injustices and losses that he's suffered during that time. Truly, what else but love has the power to lift us up, keep us steady, and comfort us in the face of pervasive pain and tragedy? Brad's story of love's perseverance is one of the most powerful stories I know, a story that I think I'll be part of for the rest of my life, along with his son and his wife and her daughter, along with my former congregation members, Lynn and Mark, and with my beloved husband, Tom. American culture doesn't really believe in liberating love. American culture would rather have us buy and sell love, broker it for power and influence, and package it up for profit. But love perseveres. It invites us to pull back the veil of culture and see the real truth underneath, that at the center of life, in the center of each of us, love perseveres. The love that conquers hatred, the love that forgives trespass, the love that reaches out to a stranger, and the love in that stranger that takes the risk of reaching back. This is the love that perseveres, the love that liberates. So when Brad says, love, go give some, I love that line, right? Love, go give some, people. He's asking us to live true to our universalist heritage, to step beyond safe love, and let love's power move us toward change, and not just as individuals. He's asking us to get our love organized and make real change. He's asking us to step beyond safe love, because love inspires us and it holds us through good times and hard times. It lures us forward, reminding us, even in our most deeply despairing moments, that life has meaning and it has value. Love given and received reminds us that our lives matter. So I hope You're inspired by Brad the Dad today. I hope you'll tell somebody your love story today. I hope you'll go out today when you go out. Give some love. Shalom, blessed be, Ashe, and Amen.